Steve Christie is here, Pima County Supervisor. There is some good to see you, first of all.
Well, thank you, Bill. Great to be here.
And let me do this intro, because, of course, we want to pay the bills. Green Things and Zocalo Village. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio at the Bustos Media Center in central Tucson. We've got five radio stations under one roof. This one's 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. We've got our worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com, and I'm very proud of our website. It's been very few changes to the website. It's very user-friendly over our 15 years doing the radio show. You put in the name of the guest in the search engine, and it will pop up. It's very easy to use, very user-friendly, as they say. Telephone interviews, when we do those on the Live Line, 790-2040. The Live Line is presented by Sean and the gang over at Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management Supervisor Steve Christie, the lone Republican on the five-member board of Pima County, the board that makes the big decisions for this county, and he is the lone Republican representing the 4th District. Steve Christie, how are you, sir?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Tell me some good news about Mount Lemmon.
Well, first of all, it's bustling with activity and commerce. They've got, as you well know, some new additions to the village up there.
The hotel's doing well.
Hotel's doing well. The casitas up there are doing great. Sawmill restaurant, the country store, they're all booming right now because it's that season, and it's going to, I think, even become better this weekend. We're talking about another 6 to 8 inches of potential snowfall.
Boy, we need it. We've had very little moisture.
That'll fill up the aquifers and the storage tanks up there, you bet.
Yeah, and we talked last month, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on that, but there is movement toward really evaluating the whole look at fire suppression in Pima County right now.
We're waiting for the anticipated wildfire mitigation plan that we passed unanimously a couple of meetings ago, and the county administrator is committed to providing such a plan, and I'm excited to find out what the details of that are, and we're waiting for that. Another issue with Summerhaven, though, is what we call the FLAP grant, and don't ask me the acronym.
Wait a minute. FLAP, F-L-A-P,
yeah,
FLAP?
FLAP grant.
Okay.
And maybe there's another P at the end. But in any event, it will include creating 90 more parking spaces up there at the bottom end of the road that goes through Summerhaven, as well as two new public restroom facilities and sidewalks. So that's going to make a great difference for the community up there, and we're excited about that too.
Well, I hope the grant comes through, because there's, you know, John Lesher was saying 93% of the federal grants that Pima County receives could now be at risk because of the freeze on the federal government on spending efforts. That's very concerning. But hold your thought on that, because I want to talk a little bit about rural, and we, you know, you call Summerhaven's rural Pima County, as is Reddington, that area. And I know that there was it was really a brutal crime of a Good Samaritan. I think it happened on Christmas Eve out in the Reddington area. And the widow of this gentleman who went to the aid of apparently a motorist in distress, was the widow was saying that very disturbed that the getting sheriff's response took too darn long, Steve Christie.
Well, this is an ongoing problem of services out there, particularly law enforcement. It is a very remote area. Matter of fact, in that Reddington stretch, you can go a mile and cross three different county lines.
Really?
It's at the furthest northeast tip of Pima County, and it's an historic area. It's known for its ranching and passing generationally ranch lands down through the decades, and very good, hardworking individuals live out there, and it's attracting new families as well, and it's growing. but it still has that very remote element to it. And the roads are dirt, and they can be very difficult to overcome during rain seasons and things of this nature, and are needed a constant repair. But to back up what you mentioned, it was very tragic. Ms. Clifford, Christina Clifford's husband, answered the door on Christmas Eve to a complete stranger who was begging for help with his vehicle. It needed a jump start or something, he said. And after much deliberation, Paul, the husband, agreed to go out with him and give him help. And he did not return. And they found him a couple of miles from his home next to his burning truck, and he was brutally murdered. And apparently the sheriff's response took at least close to an hour. And by that particular point, obviously it was too late. But it just underscores and indicates the severity of the enforcement problem out there. And we asked Ms. Clifford to come before the board and tell her feelings of it. It was a very emotional. She was most comprehensive in all elements, as well as eloquent and moving. I don't think there was a dry eye in the house, and justifiably so. She did a terrific job, and she honored the memory of her husband so beautifully by asking that the county deliver on its responsibilities, which is to provide law enforcement protection to all taxpayers, regardless of where they are.
Yeah.
And I understand, I get it. It's way out in the remote areas, and the center of activity is in the more urban areas of the county, and certainly that's where the resources of the sheriff's department have to go. But nonetheless, the Reddington residents are taxpayers, and they deserve protection too. So we tasked the county administrator again to come up with a rural safety plan for Pima County, not just the Reddington area, but you have similar areas out towards Ajo and Aravaca and Elephant Head and a number of rural areas that I think every one of our districts in Pima County have instances of difficult times for police coverage. So we were able to put forth this request for the plan to the county administrator, and it passed unanimously. And we're looking in 90 days to see what that is. But it's really going to require thinking outside the box, as that somewhat overused cliche is now. But it fits in this category because we can't afford at this particular point just to throw money at it. With more resources, more personnel, more equipment, more deputies on that stretch of land out there, that's very, very remote. So we want to look at other things like high technology, maybe drone surveillance, maybe empowering area residents to be deputized, or anything like this that's not of the norm but is outside the parameters of law enforcement that we're used to, because we're dealing with an area that's outside the parameters.
Yeah, like a volunteer police force or sheriff's department to serve the rural areas. People forget that, you know, sure, Tucson's very urban, but this is has some extremely rural areas of Pima County.
And they're absolutely beautiful, and there's ranch lands that have been out there forever, and it's very amenable to hiking and camping and all that. But unfortunately, the criminal element, as Mrs. Clipper pointed out, they know that there is a very bad response time return for the emergency vehicles.
They know it's a low coverage area.
So sure, obviously they're going to utilize that.
Yeah, let's get back to the federal grants. The 90%, a little over 90%, 93% of federal grants in Pima County could now be at risk, according to the county officials.
Well, this is the second meeting in a row that we've had discussion of these grants, and we have no more definitive information on the condition of these grants or the status of these grants than we did the first time. Nothing has changed from the meeting before as to what grants are vulnerable, how many of the grants are. There's been wide estimates, $190 million worth of grants or 10% of the budget. We don't know. And this, unfortunately, has served as some sort of a grandstanding opportunity for my colleagues to create issues with the Trump administration and DOGE and things of this nature. But the fact of the matter is, this reliance on grants is a very dangerous issue and has been dangerous for some time.
You've been talking about this for years.
I can't remember voting for too many grants over 8 years of being on the board, because that's taxpayer money too. And you wonder about the efficacy of these grants that we're receiving and the reliance on them. And now the county administrator has kind of narrowed the severity of the grants at risk to about $56 million, still a very substantial sum. But really nothing has changed about what grants are going to be discontinued or removed or canceled. But the issue is, we have got to learn to live within our own means and to be able to rely on the monies that are generated from the local economy and the local community through sales tax and the traditional forms of revenue influx, and not to be so dependent on grants because of this very reason.
All right, let's take a break right here. Pima County Supervisor, Republican District 4, Steve Christie will stick around for segment number 2. Coming up, segment number 3, world-renowned comet discoverer David Levy's got a new book out from University of Arizona Press. We'll talk about that. Then our legal attorney, we will have Don Luce in segment 4. So that's still to come. Let's take a break. Be right back.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. It is our Thursday edition of the program, and tomorrow, that means Friday focus time, we will bring the city manager, will be in studio with me, Tim Tomier, kind of in the waning moments before the vote will be finalized on Proposition 414. Steve Christie is here, the lone Republican on the Pima County Board of Supervisors, and I know you're not a huge fan of Prop 414. Being a former very well-known automobile dealer, I'm sure your colleagues, whether they're retired or still active, are not probably real happy with 414.
I think that's a fair assumption to make. Every time, as I've said to you before, every time an increase in sales tax goes up, it just sends shivers down retailers, expressly large ticket item retailers, spines that they know it's going to affect a deal. It could make or break deals. And people, understandably so, you know, if they can save $500-$600 by going somewhere else to purchase rather than in the city of Tucson, they'll do it. And yes, I've been aware that the New Car Dealers Association has been very active and against this proposition, as they should be, as should all business elements, as well as the taxpayers. This is another example of misappropriation or misprioritization of efforts by the Tucson City Council. Instead of trying to find ways to spend more money, why don't we spend the money that they have more efficiently and effectively rather than throwing more money at it, relying on tax increases?
All right. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management will be utilized right now because caller Mike would like to speak with Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie. Hey, Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Supervisor Christie. Thanks for doing what you do. You know, I watched the Board of Supervisors meeting the other day when Jan Lesch was giving her presentation about the budget. And all I saw in the budget priorities worksheet that she presented was ways to spend more money. Will she be giving us a presentation about ways to actually cut costs from the county?
Well, certainly from me. That will be coming up as the budget issues unfold, and they will be in the next few weeks. I've always tried to keep our tax rate at revenue neutral. So whenever there's an increase in the valuation from the assessor's office, which really controls property values, which is the basis of what is taxed upon by the percentage that is set by the Board of Supervisors, I've always maintained that we should set that rate so it reflects the increase in the value, so it does not have a net increase of raising property taxes. As is well documented in this show, I'm the lone Republican, and it is very difficult to express that viewpoint to my colleagues. Matter of fact, one of my colleagues, Dr. Matt Hines, he was suggesting a 47-cent increase to potentially make up the difference should some of these grants not come through, which again is a wrong way of looking at things. So unfortunately, my colleagues, like all of their pet projects and all of their pet causes to remain in the budget at taxpayer expense, and if it requires cutting those, they are against that. And in order to compensate for the budget crisis or the budget necessity, they want to raise property taxes. So I will be continuing to fight for revenue neutral tax setting, so that when the valuation raises, property taxes don't raise either.
All right. Steve Christie is with us, and we are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, speaking of Zocalo Village, which is part of Green Things. Over at 3384 East River Road, the teardown sale is going on, up to 50% off. It's a rare opportunity to purchase one-of-a-kind handcrafted Mexican art and furniture. And the reason we're calling it a teardown sale, three of their restored historic buildings must be vacated and torn down to meet federal floodplain regulations. So the winner in all this are the consumers. So go by, check it out, up to 50% off. All right, Supervisor Christie, Sheriff Nanos, along joining with the Democratic sheriff in Santa Cruz County, are going against the tide here, and those two counties will not join the new border task force.
Well, this is kind of indicative of Sheriff Danos's belief that he will not participate or cooperate with federal authorities to enforce immigration laws, especially if illegal aliens come in into our county and break the law. I'm wondering if he comes across a situation, or his deputies do, where a bank robber or a murderer or some heinous individual breaks the law and they find that he is here illegally, is the sheriff and the deputy, are they going to hold that individual for ICE and Border Patrol to at least to apprehend this individual, or are they just going to book him and let him go, like it seems that that's the modus operandi? So for him not to want to involve himself in another task force, I kind of get that. I'm sure he's task force out. Nothing seems to come from these task force. They're probably where good ideas go away. But I wish he was more open to cooperating with federal authorities on criminal illegal activity, and by criminal illegal aliens. And if that would certainly make a lot more sense if that's the desire of the deputies to serve and protect.
How about his particular budget? That'll be coming up here too as you start looking at all the departments. Historically, the sheriff's department, because of overtime, it is difficult for them to project where they're going to wind up.
Well, that's true, and it seems to be an ongoing thread in every budget negotiation with the sheriff's department. I can't remember too many times where the sheriff's department came in on budget, or at least within the realistic parameters of the budget. And again, it's one of these issues where instead of maybe going into a deep dive of different proportions, again, bringing up the well-used cliche of thinking outside the box, Sheriff Danos goes back and says, I need more money and I need more resources. So we're obviously going to be looking at the sheriff's budget very closely. My colleague, Supervisor Hines, made it very clear that he has deep concerns over it, as all of us do. And there are other mitigating issues with the budget as well that Dr. Hines wants to look into, such as the situation similar to the recent conviction of the deputy over sexual
alleged incident.
I think those are going to be factors that come to play into how we determine future budgetary issues with the sheriff's department.
This whole budget is going to be a really tricky one, though, because of this federal granting issue.
It certainly is, and that's why I say a lot of it is premature until we get a better handle on those things. And unfortunately, it gives my colleagues a chance to express a great deal of hyperbole on the Trump administration and cutting back the federal budget and federal workers and things of those that are really a distraction to the root issue here, which is to try to make our budget as appropriate and manageable as possible without having to rely on federal grants.
And you and Dr. Hines have really worked together a couple of meetings ago and are still working together on that issue about looking at fire readiness in Pima County.
Yes, he's been a very strong vocal supporter of trying to find remedies to make sure that our outlying areas in rural areas, underserved areas as far as fire protection and wildfire mitigation. He's done a great job with the district fire districts, as well as the chiefs out there, and bringing them together to analyze what their needs are and what their challenges are, and there are many. And they were highlighted at the bequest of Supervisor Hines at the last meeting, which prompted the whole issue of wildfire mitigation, as well as to find proper funding that will sustain these rural fire districts and allow them to do what they need to do, and that's to protect the public and the property.
Yeah, because some areas, just like what we're talking about, the very rural areas It's a challenge, not only getting the sheriff's department, getting law enforcement, but fire protection. You know, two very, could anything be more critical, right?
Yeah, well, or foundational of county responsibility.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right, Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie, who appears with us the first Thursday of each month. We'll see you in April. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I look forward to it.
Don't you want to add one other thing that you
Thank
always...
Thank you for reminding me. I had almost forgot. I love being supervisor. Thank
there
you.
There you go. There you go. Put it out there for you. All right. Take a break right here. Dr. David Levy will be on the live line after this.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Midway point of the Thursday edition of the Buckmaster Show. Bill Buckmaster with you in the driver's seat in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Boy, the spring weather. Hopefully we'll get some rain, and it's going to be delightful over in Silver City and Grant County this weekend. A perfect weekend to do some late winter, early spring hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. Temperatures over there are usually in about 60 degrees, something like that, in Silver City. It's about 10 degrees cooler because of the elevation, so it makes just for a delightful outing, like right now, 58 degrees over there. And it's about a three-hour drive from Tucson, not bad at all. You'll have a great time. Start your planning for your enchanting getaway in the Land of Enchantment by visiting their website, southwestnewmexico.org. One of our contributors, we've got such a great, I'm so proud of this team we have put together, 24 regular contributors to the program. They're all at the top of their game, top of their fields. One of them is Dr. David Levy. He is our contributor on science, former science editor of Parade magazine, of course, renowned comet discoverer. And he's the author or editor of more than three dozen books and other products. And he's with us on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. David, how are you?
Hello, Bill. And before we go any further, I wish to apologize to you and your listeners that I forgot last month. And there's no excuse. No. I just forgot.
No.
I will try not to let that happen again.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. The new book is out. I understand the University of Arizona did a very nice job with the treatment of this new book, and you're really excited about it. Tell our listeners about the book, David.
Yeah, the book is called Stargazers. And what I've been doing is that I've been writing a column for our local Vail Voice newspaper that eventually was able to be picked up by many astronomy club newsletters, including the Journal of the Royal Astronomical Society of Canada. And it's every month I've been adding it, and I've been doing it now for about 15, 20 years. Anyway, what I decided to try to do is to take the best of these columns and put them into a book. And the book is being launched at the Tucson Festival of Books next week, and it's called Stargazers. The title is based on a famous poem by William Wordsworth called Stargazers, and it's one of my favorite poems. And the reason that I like it so much is that he describes how people who, without any experience, looking through a telescope, and they're disappointed in what it has to show.
Mm.
I'm wondering whose fault is it? Is it the telescope? Is it the lens? Is it the sky itself? And I compared it to my own experience because I've had that problem as well, although I have never, ever in my life looked through a bad telescope, but other people have, and I've heard them complain. Anyway, I wrote about this in my master's thesis, and the response from my, back then, to my thesis director was, Wordsworth wrote some wretched verse. And I just laughed and laughed. I thought it was the funniest thing. And I went and told him how funny it was. And he looks at me seriously. He says, I did not mean that as a joke. And so then I started laughing even more. And he smiled and he said, you know what? I think you're right. I think it was pretty funny.
So some folks get a bad experience looking into their, you know, first telescope viewing experience, that's going to turn them off forever, right?
Yeah, it is. But that's what I almost did when I first looked through a telescope.
Yeah.
A 3-inch telescope that I got as a bar mitzvah present on September the 1st, 1960.
Wow.
And I'm looking through it, and all I see is a big fuzzy blob with a hole in the middle of it. And my first reaction is, this telescope goes back, it's lousy. And I kind of hit it a little bit, and I looked through it again, and the eyepiece had slipped a little bit closer to the mirror, and the fuzzy spot was a little bit smaller, and the whole black hole in the middle of it was a little smaller. And so I thought, uh-huh. So now I deliberately gently moved the eyepiece closer and closer until the black spot went away and I got my first look at Jupiter. And that, with the four moons, and Galileo himself would have felt no greater thrill than I did on that night with my parents in 1960.
That sealed the deal, didn't it? For the beginning.
It sure is that game.
Beginning of a great career, discovering 23 comets, including, of course, the co-discovery of Shoemaker-Levy 9. That was the comet that collided with Jupiter in 1994, producing the most spectacular explosions ever witnessed in our solar system. Time for the Dr. David Levy quote of the month. What do you have for us, David?
Well, next week, Bill, I will be in California to see the lunar eclipse. And to celebrate that, I'm going to quote from Thomas Hardy. And I think most of your listeners know of Thomas Hardy as a fantastic novelist.
Yes.
Of the D'Urbervilles. But he was also a great poet.
Hmm.
And this poem about lunar eclipse is comparing the beautiful shadow of the Earth on the moon to the to what's happening on the Earth. And I think it'll relate, even though he wrote this in 1903, it relates to today.
Okay.
"My shadow Earth from pole to central sea now steals along the moon's meek shine, an even monochrome and curving line of imperturbable serenity. How shall I link such sun-cast symmetry with the torn, troubled form I know as thine? That profile, placid as a brow divine, with continents of moil and misery. And can immense mortality but throw so small a shade? And heaven's high human scheme be hemmed within the coast yon arc implies? Is such the stellar gauge of earthly show? Nation at war with nation, brains that teem, heroes and women fairer than the skies."
Very nice. Very apropos. David Levy, always a pleasure. We'll look for you at the Tucson Festival of Books. You'll be signing copies of your new book, Stargazers. And that will be, I think you'll be at the Science Center. There'll be like a tent or something, right, David?
It'll be in the University of Arizona tent. I'm doing a signing on Sunday afternoon from 1:30 to 2:30. And a lecture in the same place at 4.
Perfect. Hey, one quick question from Tom on the other side of the glass. When the lunar eclipse happens, David Levy, will the moon turn red?
It's supposed to, because the Earth's shadow is a ruddy, dark red. Hmm. On the side, it could turn anywhere from a bright red to a regular red to a very dark red. And then on December 30th, 1963, I saw the moon simply disappear completely during a total eclipse.
Wow.
That was probably the darkest eclipse ever.
Wow. All right, David. Good luck with the new book and at the book festival. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. And I'll speak with you next month. And take care.
Thanks, David Levy, with us. Coming up next, Attorney Don Luce on the Buckmaster Show. We will be right back.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at FlyingLeapVineyards.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun, covering your hometown.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. Once a month, it's our pleasure to bring in attorney Don Luce. And I was talking earlier with David Levy how proud I am of this stable of great contributors, two dozen folks like Don Luce. When it comes to the legal arena, I'm just lucky to be able to call upon these people. Don is the Buckmaster Show legal contributor. He's the author of two very popular books. When you live in Arizona, you never have a shortage of books about law, but the book that we do have is kind of the one I think is the gold standard. It's Arizona Laws 101, a handbook for non-lawyers, and Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know, both books in their second printing. Good idea to have both copies in your library. Don Luce, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Bill. Thanks for having me back.
Always a pleasure. The voters in November here in the state of Arizona approved Proposition 139. That was the so-called abortion measure. But wasn't the end of the story, was it, Don Luce?
No. So what we've seen over the past several years essentially is overlap of laws dealing with the same subject, in this case, abortion. So I think your regular listeners will remember that we talked several months ago about the 1864 law that basically prohibited abortion, but wasn't removed from the law books until 2024, if you can imagine.
Yeah.
So that was a long one. That was a law that stayed on the books for over a century. That law overlapped with another law that the Arizona legislature enacted in 2022, which I'll refer to as a 15-week law, because what that law said essentially was abortion may be permitted through the 15th week.
Right.
But the 15-week law, as I just mentioned, was in conflict with the 1864 abortion ban. That was finally resolved in 2024, when the Arizona legislature repealed the Civil War era abortion ban, and then we were left with the 15-week law. But then what happened in November was the voters approved Prop 129, which was a constitutional amendment allowing abortion through the point of viability, which is generally considered to be 22 to 24 weeks. Mm-hmm. So up until this week, we had an overlap between Prop 139 and the 15-week law, which obviously were inconsistent.
Right.
So a group of plaintiffs filed suit asking the court to declare unconstitutional the 2022 statute, the 15-week law, and the judge agreed. Not surprising that the judge agreed, because the Arizona Attorney General, who represents the state, agreed. So everyone in that lawsuit apparently agreed that the 15-week law was inconsistent with Prop 139. So now we just have one law, doesn't overlap with anything else, that provides for the fundamental right to abortion in Arizona through the point of viability. Now, the only thing that limits...
It's not the end of the story yet.
It is not. The only thing that limits that are rules that are based on a compelling state interest. Okay, so... Now,
compelling state interest.
What does that mean exactly?
Yes. What does that mean?
So there are some statutes that are still on the books that have to be looked at, and a determination needs to be made as to whether the restriction constitutes a compelling state interest.
Right, right.
So one of those is a 24-hour waiting period. So there is a statute that requires patients seeking abortion services wait 24 hours.
And that's on the books now.
Yes.
Okay.
Informed consent.
All right.
Now, is that a compelling state interest? I don't know. Maybe. There's another law that seeks to govern abortion to patients who are doing it solely because of genetic abnormalities of the child.
I don't know.
But no. These are the issues that still remain to be resolved. What about consent of a parent for a minor?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, don't know. How about requiring the performance of an ultrasound before the abortion is performed?
Mm-hmm.
How about requiring the patient to listen to the sounds of the heartbeat of the fetus?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay. Well, we don't know. That's the short answer. But these are issues that are yet to be litigated.
Mm-hmm.
But now that the 2022 statute has been declared unconstitutional, all we have on the books are the Constitution, our Prop 139, which is a constitutional amendment, which supersedes any statute, right? The Constitution mm-hmm. trumps mm-hmm. statute.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have these other laws that seem to impose restrictions on the ability, the fundamental right mm-hmm. of a person to get an abortion, mm-hmm. and they'll need to...
They'll each have to be litigated then, right?
They will. They'll have to be tested,
okay.
And a determination will have to be made with respect to each.
All right. Anything more on that before I move on? Or...
Well, yeah. Okay. I do have one more thing.
Okay.
So in the Arizona House,
yeah.
There is a proposal to impose more restrictions on the right of a person to obtain an abortion during the period of viability. This would be in the form of a referral to the voters, presumably in 2026, right? Just mm-hmm. like Prop 139 was passed mm-hmm. last mm-hmm. November, this mm-hmm. would be put on the ballot. And again, it's just a proposal. But what it would do is it would require a personal examination by a physician verifying that a pregnancy exists.
Mm-hmm.
It would require a determination of the patient's blood type.
Mm-hmm.
It would require that the patient be informed that she may see the remains of the fetus. And it would require a follow-up visit to confirm that the pregnancy has been terminated. This would have to do with the ability of a patient to get a drug to terminate the pregnancy, which is very, very common, right?
Mm-hmm.
So under this proposal that is currently being debated mm-hmm. in the House of Representatives, that sort of pill by mail thing would be modified extensively.
Mm-hmm.
And so these would be additional restrictions on the fundamental right of a person to get an abortion in Arizona. Mm-hmm. And then the question would become, how do the voters feel about that? Because if it does get referred to the ballot, it likely also would constitute a constitutional amendment, which would stand at parity with Prop 139.
Yeah.
So this discussion has not ended.
No, that's very evident. One discussion going on, it's very interesting about Arizona and our... we've had some real issues in putting inmates to death down loose.
There is a House concurrent resolution 2024 that deals with that exact subject. So under HCR 2024, a firing squad would essentially replace lethal injection as the method for putting a condemned prisoner to death. So you might wonder, is a firing squad cruel and unusual punishment?
I don't know.
Okay, so there
it seems like it would be instant death to me.
That would depending. Be an, that would be an argument that it's less cruel
yes.
than a lethal injection.
Yes.
So should a prisoner get to decide whether to be put to death by firing squad or lethal injection?
As is the case in some states, I mm-hmm. believe. Mm-hmm.
There are five states that have provisions for death by firing squad.
Mm-hmm.
They are Idaho, Mississippi, Oklahoma, South Carolina, and Utah.
Yeah.
So recently in South Carolina, their statute was tested on the cruel and unusual punishment theory
mm-hmm.
under their state constitution. Mm-hmm. And the court in South Carolina said in its ruling, it is not cruel or unusual punishment to use a firing squad to carry out capital punishment.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, what I find interesting is that even a U.S. Supreme Court justice,
mm-hmm.
Sonia Sotomayor, who was appointed to the Supreme Court by President Barack Obama,
mm-hmm.
believes that firing squads are okay because they eliminate or negate the problems associated with lethal injections because mm-hmm. they provide a certain quick death.
Yes.
And so if you look at it, I think the knee-jerk reaction to firing squads is that's just barbaric. Who would be in support of that? But then if you look at the history of using drugs to concoct a lethal injection, that has had all kinds
of horrific problems.
So what you would have to replace that potentially is a method that would result in certain death.
Mm.
Our governor a while ago essentially appointed a retired federal magistrate judge, David Duncan, to study this.
Mm-hmm.
And Duncan issued a report that suggested that switching to a firing squad would be a more humane way of carrying out executions,
mm-hmm.
but the governor, in a controversial mm-hmm. decision, decided really not to abide the conclusions in that report, and I believe probably is opposed, I'm speculating, mm-hmm. Is opposed to using a firing squad as opposed to a lethal injection.
Hmm.
Yeah, but you know the lethal injection method, not only does it not always work quickly, but the ability to procure those drugs.
Very difficult.
You don't go to Walgreens to buy that stuff.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you've got that issue, plus you've got the issue, the more important issue is it humane? Is that the most humane way to carry out an execution?
Very interesting. Don Luce. Two books, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers and Estate Planning, What You Need to Know, both books in their second printing. Attorney Don Luce of the Luce Law Groups, group. They have a beautiful office here in Tucson and up in the Phoenix area in the Valley of the Sun. On behalf of Mr. Luce and Tom on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing, Bill Buckmaster, wishing everybody well.